Welcome to Soul Busy. I'm Reach.
And I'm Carly,
your CEO
and COO
sisters. We share unfiltered convo on balancing hustle with mindfulness
while running successful businesses with soul
and the real life between it all. We're welcoming Hannah, first of all, welcome, our new friend that we just met. And you are a certified holistic health coach and a functional gut health practitioner. Mm-hmm. That is a mouthful.
So cool.
And very impressive. And I have so many questions for you because recently I was on a very long plane ride and one of the options that were available to me were a master class in gut health.
Oh, wow.
And I actually watched the whole thing. You know, like the brand master class?
Yeah.
And I watched the whole thing and I have never, A, been interested in the topic or B, known that I needed to be. Mm. And once I started learning about it, I started to realize how much, and I love spirituality and health and I, you know, all the life hacks. And so like, I was kind of surprised that I didn't know, but once I started to learn, I was like, I need to know more. You reached out and I'm so glad you're here. So,
well, for me, I was on gut health TikTok for a little while because I'm still trying to get pregnant, but like there were a lot of like people who were talking about gut health and fertility. Yeah. So I can't wait to dive into that because that's something I've been seeing like everywhere blow up.
Yeah. So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself, your journey, how you got here and what you do?
Yes, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me. I like you said, my name's Hannah, and I really got into all of this because I was struggling with my own chronic digestive issues. And I was kind of always the girl who was like healthy and ate healthy and I exercised and I played sports and I almost played a sport in college. And I was like very familiar with, you know, eating healthy food and moving my body and all of that kind of stuff. But I was still really struggling. And if you kind of like asked my friends back then, I mean, this was like a decade ago at this point. I was like the girl that you would go to for health advice, but I was still dealing with all of these chronic digestive issues to the point where I would like eat an apple and I'd look 6 months pregnant with bloating. And if anyone can resonate with that, like it's super uncomfortable and it's actually like painful. And as you can imagine, I mean, you don't really want to go out to eat with your friends or like wear your cute outfit when you're feeling this way. So nothing, it wasn't really making sense, right? I had like taken out gluten. I had taken out dairy. I had taken out sugar. I barely drank alcohol. I moved my body. I was eating organic and all of this stuff. I was like trying to do all of the right things. And I was still really struggling with what they would have called like IBS. And no one really had any answers for me. Because when you looked things up online, it was like, just do an elimination diet and take out, you know, eat healthy and take out all these foods or whatever. And it like helped probably 20%, but it wasn't really, really like actually changing my gut at a root cause level and helping get rid of some of those symptoms. And it kind of spiraled from there. It was like bloating, constipation, food sensitivities. And then that leads to like tons of food fear, which I didn't need with my history of like yo-yo dieting. You know, I had been on like every diet in the world previous to that, as young women do, unfortunately. So that kind of like also created some of the digestive distress that I was experiencing. But anyway, I just started to really dig deeper into what is gut health? What does that actually mean? And why would I be reacting to all of these foods? And why would like healthy eating not fully be doing it for me? And then I realized that there was just a lot more to gut health than just the food that you eat, like your gut environment and digestive capacity and your gut lining and all of that, like very cool stuff that we can get into if you want. But that's when I really like dove headfirst into all of this. And then I was like, I started working with women. And I was realizing that every woman I spoke to was also dealing with the same thing. And they were being told that it was like just in their head and they were just stressed and they just needed to like relax, you know? And that's when I was like, I'm not doing this. Like women need much more support than this. And they don't deserve to just be like shooed out of the doctor's office and then they're left crying. Like someone needs to do something about this. And that's when I just kind of like, dedicated my life to all of this. And now I no longer, medicine, yeah, go ahead.
Which I think is fun. Or given medicine to like fix a gut issue that also makes your gut worse.
Well, I have a problem with the whole medical industry as a whole, personally. Like I think it's a little bit broken in the sense like, oh, there's a symptom. Oh, here's a medication. You know, like an example is like, I'm pregnant. This is my third pregnancy. On my first two pregnancies, I have a severe heartburn to the point where like I can't breathe sometimes. And you know, the first thing is always Pepcid or like this prescription. I recently went to a doula and she was like, you need to go on digestive enzymes like immediately with magnesium. And I literally started taking them and I don't have heartburn anymore. Ooh. And I'm not on Pepsi.
That's great.
And I just think it's funny. Mm-hmm. And I talk to people too, and it's not a known thing. Like you have to advocate for yourself and you can't just trust. I'm not saying don't trust doctors. I of course have the utmost respect for the medical field and for doctors. I'm not saying that, but I am saying, why aren't we exploring holistic options before we're just prescribing a lifetime medication that like could have all of these problematic long-term side effects? Why? I don't understand.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like it's really just not what they're taught. So I think I try to put it in two different camps. Like doctors really have their place. Doctors, I think, are fantastic with diagnosis and emergency medicine. And like, if you get in a car accident, don't come to me. Like, don't, I can't help you, you know,
like, I can't help you.
Like probiotics aren't going to do it. and with that being said, you know, there's also space for people like me and people that do the work that we do when you're looking at more like chronic stuff versus acute, like something right. that's acute. Right. It's emergency. It happens one time. We need an intervention. I think they really excel at that. And you know, sometimes you need an antibiotic and it's going to like save your life. And that's what they're great at. But when you're kind of dealing with these like chronic underlying digestive issues or, you know, low energy or thyroid stuff or whatever, I think there are other things to be explored. And it's just like simply not what they're taught. They're taught, these are your symptoms. This is the diagnosis that goes along with your symptoms. This is the medication that we prescribe with this diagnosis, you know?
So right. I agree. Yeah. And no hate. I agree with you with the turn of saying it's for chronic that is the issue, because it's like, okay, the long-term effects of whatever, like even like depression or like I'm sad or like things like that. I think it's funny how quickly we just go to like Lexapro. Like why, there's so many things we can do, or like I'm anxious, here's lorazepam. Like, no, like why, what's the root cause of why you're anxious? Yeah. What's the root cause of why you're depressed? Let's talk about it. And let's make sure we're uncovering things before we lean on that. Not saying you shouldn't, but like, have you crossed every bridge before doing that is a question that I have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think people aren't fully aware of some of the negative side effects that these things can have, things like birth control and things like, you know. Yeah. And, or even like Pepcid, I mean, even something like an acid blocker, PPIs. I mean, when they were first brought onto the market, like PPIs were, Pepcid is more like an antihistamine, but PPIs are like acid blockers. They were really given to doctors and told to be used for like 6 weeks because they come with side effects, meaning, I mean, they increase your risk for osteoporosis. They can increase your risk for SIBO, nutrient deficiencies. Like, it's not going to be a good long-term option. If someone's like actively developing an ulcer, okay, you know, that can really help like stop that. But you know, we have a client who just worked with us. She was on them for like 15 years, you know, like you should not be on them for that long.
For 15 years. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Yeah. Well, what I learned too was interesting about how like I have that having heartburn is, correct me if I'm wrong in delivering this, but like having heartburn is that you have acid, but you need the acid to reduce the acid. So by removing the acid, you're actually in theory making the problem worse.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah. A lot of acid reflux stems from not having enough stomach acid, which is like very contrary to popular belief. Cause you're like, I'm feeling acid. Why would I want more of it? But oftentimes, not every single case, sometimes there's like an anatomical issue, like a lower esophageal sphincter issue. Like it can fit in other camps, but very often it's because people don't have enough stomach acid, which essentially like you're eating this food, you don't have enough stomach acid to break it down. So then it's like sitting in your GI tract longer than we want it to. And then the little acid that you have is coming back up the esophagus. And that's when you're feeling it like in your chest and your heart. When we add more acid to that, like you add digestive enzymes to that, right? Things, the food can flow the direction that we want it to and get broken down more efficiently. You won't feel it quite as much. So yeah, very oftentimes it's not enough.
Completely gone. But I can say that I'm not in physical pain. Like I can get through the waves of heartburn that come with and still breathe. Whereas before I like literally could not breathe.
Yeah.
And it was,
which is wonderful. And pregnancy is, you know, it's interesting because sometimes it's just the position of the baby. Like you can do all the natural hacks and it's just like the baby's literally like pushing on your organs. So
I have a torso. So I'm going with that's probably it.
Yeah. So, but enzymes are an easy intervention. Like you might as well, you know?
I want to ask you a question to get our conversation kind of flowing towards a lot of the questions that we have. So first and foremost, one of the things I've always heard is that your gut is your second brain or potentially even your first brain. Can you explain that entire theory and concept, please?
Yeah. So your gut is influencing your brain and your brain is influencing your gut. So there's like a bidirectional highway that we call the gut-brain axis that essentially is reflective of the connection between the two. One of the biggest ways is through the vagus nerve. So the vagus nerve it's technically like a pair of cranial nerves and it connects the gut and the brain. It attaches at the bottom of the brainstem and goes all the way into the belly. So when you think of the vagus nerve, you can think of that feeling of like getting butterflies in your stomach, and you'll feel it in your stomach when your brain like senses something, right? You don't take a supplement, you're not eating anything, but you might have to like run to the bathroom because you're feeling nervous. That's your nervous system influencing your gut. Your vagus nerve also impacts heart rate and many other different things because it connects to different organs kind of like down the chain. But this is really connecting the gut and the brain. So essentially, you know, your gut is sending messages to your brain all the time through the vagus nerve. I like to say digestion it's more so like a nervous system regulated process. It really starts in the brain because we have these nervous system responses like the sympathetic or the parasympathetic nervous system response. You can think of it as like fight or flight and rest and digest. A lot of people have heard of like, oh, I'm in fight or flight or you're chronically stressed. You know, that other response is that parasympathetic or that rest and digest. This is, you need to be in the state to actually digest your food, right? So this is like your nervous system influencing your digestion. When you're in that sympathetic dominant state, you're going to produce less stomach acid. You're going to produce fewer pancreatic enzymes. These are things that you need to like break down your food. Gut motility will be impacted. So we can literally see the nervous system and the brain impacting the gut. Then we have the fact that like a lot of neurotransmitters are produced in the gut. So you may have heard like a stat people like to throw around is like 90% of your serotonin is produced in your gut. So your gut is producing some of these neurotransmitters that of course can, you know, are impacting the brain, like serotonin and GABA and melatonin and things like that.
And when you say gut, mm-hmm. like, are you talking about your stomach? Are you talking about your bowels? Are you talking about all of it? Like, what are you referencing?
Yeah, this is a great question because I think people talk about it and they don't exactly know.
Right. Like, I hear it as like a term.
Is it your stomach?
Trust your gut instinct. But right. Like, what the hell am I trusting?
I thought it was your stomach.
Am I saying trust my colon? Is that like actually what I'm saying here?
I mean, kind of. So, So there's like your digestive system, right? And that's many different organs are involved in that process. And then there's your gut. I think when a lot of people are referencing your gut microbiome, it's like the trillions of microorganisms in your gut. Most of these are in your large intestine or your colon. So a lot of people are referring to that.
Okay.
When I say gut, like the stomach is involved. The small intestine is very much involved and the large intestine is involved. I say gut, but I kind of am like talking about your entire digestive tract because like your pancreas and obviously your stomach, like all of these things also play a role in your digestive health. But most people are going to be referring probably to your large intestine, your colon. That's where most of these microorganisms or bacteria are.
What are some signs that your like gut microbiome or your gut in general is healthy or unhealthy?
Yeah.
That's a lot to unpack, but I am very curious.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, unhealthy gut would be you're waking up bloated. You feel bloated very regularly. So I'm not really referencing the person who like goes out on a Friday night and has a couple pieces of pizza and a few beers and like is a little bloated and wakes up and is fine. That I would say is like more normal, you know, when we're eating like food like that, we can kind of expect some of that. A lot of the clients that we see are bloated after eating healthy food, bloated after eating anything. It's like impacting their quality of life, right? They're having to unbutton their pants at the end of the day. They don't want to wear certain things. They don't want to travel. A lot of our clients like don't want to travel because they will have to run to a bathroom or they don't know if they'll ever use the bathroom, right? So bloating, like chronic bloating is a big one. Any thyroid issues, I would say, very gut connected. Skin issues, so like acne, eczema, psoriasis, these things that don't go away with topical intervention, I would say very gut, usually gut mediated. Constipation. So like we want you going to the bathroom 1 to 3 times a day. If I hear that a woman doesn't go to the bathroom for like 5 days, that's not okay. I mean, that's going to then cause hormone issues because we detox estrogen like through our stool and like many toxins through our stool. So regular, you know, regularly pooping, minimal bloating, not a lot of like food reactions or sensitivities.
Three big poops a day.
She's saying one is still healthy.
Yeah.
Like she's one is
still,
fine.
Yeah, one is still normal.
Got it.
Yeah. She's saying if you're going probably more than that or less than that, that's probably terrible.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Like going like 10 times a day, like running to the bathroom not after good. Eating anything, no, yeah. not good. You know, not going for 5 days, not good. And then you should feel like, you know, pretty energized after eating. Your energy should feel good in general. You know, all of those can kind of be, if those are off, they can be deeper signs of gut issues because the gut, I mean, it affects like almost every system in the body. It's not just digestion. It affects your endocrine system, your cardiovascular system, your brain. I mean, it's like amazing, which is another reason why I love this work.
What is your take on seed oils? Mm. You know, like it's such a hot topic right now. Personally, I avoid them in my home. I try to cook with beef tallow, clarified butter, and, you know, like anything that, and just generally butter. Mm-hmm. And I don't feed my kids seed oils when I'm feeding them, but this is a two-part question, but when I'm out and we're, you know, like on vacation, like they're having French fries and chicken fingers and grilled cheese and like, I can't avoid it. So like what,
same.
And I know like part of that is balance, but like, what's your take on that whole topic?
Yeah, I do think it's gotten like a little blown up. I think sometimes these trends hit social and they just like explode and then people aren't fully questioning like what, how did this happen? Like, where did this come from?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I have a whole team of functional practitioners and I'm like, what do we think? What, how do we feel about all of this? You know, and everyone's training. We were basically told, you know, it's, we don't want too many of them, but like some is going to be fine. My biggest issue with them is that they tend to be high in omega sixes. Now we need omega sixes. Right. It's not all bad. Things like nuts and seeds have omega sixes and I consider those very healthy. The issue is most people get like way more exposure to omega sixes than they do omega threes, where the ratio, yeah, I'd have to like fact check this. Honestly, I think it's supposed to be like 3 to 1.
No, you're right. I actually, that's something they talk about for fertility a lot is like, it's not necessarily just about the seed oil. It's more about the omega six that you're getting.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people don't need enough fish or take an omega supplement. I don't know how you feel about that, but like we don't eat fish. So like I have to take an omega supplement, which I mean, whatever I'm fine with, but
no, they're great.
I did hear that that's definitely something that people, that's the reason seed oils are looked at as bad.
Yeah.
Or that they slow your metabolism down. They stay in your body for long periods of time. That's what I also was told.
I don't know. I don't know if there's like clinical data to back that. I do also believe like they'll influence the cell membrane and mitochondrial health, right? Because like any of these oils that you eat are kind of like, influencing that barrier, that cell, the cell membrane, that cell barrier. So it is important to make sure that you're getting in an adequate omega-3s. And like you said, most people do not. It's very hard to if you're not supplementing, unless you're eating, you know, salmon and like sardines and all these things very regularly, which most people are not.
Right.
So yeah, I think
sardines.
My dogs have them.
I know. I've like tried and I'm like, oh, so I like, I'm a big fan of a supplement too. Yeah.
I'd sooner try to climb out this third floor window than eat any a singular sardine.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit, like you were talking about how you had issues, then this like, I love that you had issues, you solved them.
We and love became, that you had issues.
No, that you became, you solved them and then you became an expert. I think that makes you more of an expert when you actually physically go through it yourself. But can you tell us a little bit about like how you ended up fixing that and like where you're at now?
Yeah.
What do you eat? I'm interested in what you eat also.
Yeah. How did I fix it? Gosh, years and years of trial and lots of research. The biggest thing that kind of changed my perspective on all of it was further understanding how digestion actually works and what all is kind of included in the gut environment. So when I say the gut environment, I'm talking like bacteria and microorganisms in the gut. So we have like archaea, fungi, parasites, bacteria, right? And then also digestive function. So stomach acid, bile, pancreatic enzymes. These are like how we actually break down and digest our food. And the gut barrier too. A lot of people talk about leaky gut. I think there's like a lot of misconceptions about that too, because people will just like go on leaky gut cleanses. And I'm like, you guys, when we have a breakdown of the gut barrier, like there's a reason why. Throwing supplements at it is not going to like solve it. It's not really a root cause, right? It's like, why is the gut barrier so irritated and breaking down? That's what we need to address. A lot of the times there's microbial imbalances. So what we'd call like dysbiosis, like an imbalance of gut bacteria. So once I started understanding all of that further and I ran functional testing, like we run functional stool testing on all of our clients. This is how we understand what is going on in there. Like what bacteria are present? Do you have enough good bacteria? Do you have an overabundance, like an overgrowth of opportunistic dysbiotic gut bacteria? We can have histamine producing bacteria. Histamine is like all the trend right now. We've been dealing with histamine stuff for years with clients. You know, a lot of that can stem from the gut. Liver function, like pancreatic enzyme secretion. All of these things play a role in how you can actually break down and digest your food. So for me, even though I was eating all the healthiest food, I had low stomach acid, I had dysbiosis, I had intestinal permeability, and I was living in mold and I had no idea. All of that was why I was reacting to all the foods, right? I'm like eating like healthy foods and whole foods and the whole thing. And I'm miserable, you know, and it felt like I like couldn't fully get over the hump. And I like to speak out about it too, because I think women are very quick to just like kill themselves with really restrictive diets. And it's like, we'll just take this out. Okay. I'll never eat gluten. I'll never eat dairy. I'll never eat this. I'll never eat that. It's FODMAPs. It's lectins. It's oxalates. It's like, at what expense, you know, like at what, when have we just like kind of not lost the plot, but like just taken it overboard and now we can't even live our lives anymore.
I have a question on the, like, cause you keep talking about like you were eating healthy foods and like, I think there's a lot of like common misconceptions of like, what's healthy, what's not healthy. Like, and like recently I've been seeing a lot of talk about how like there are some like harsh vegetables, like salads and like cold veggies and things your body have to process, like eating cold carrots and stuff like that, are like not the best for your digestion and or microbiome, or when you're going, I don't know the word, but is that like true? Like, cause a lot of people who are like vegetarians have a lot of issues. I would see like with their gut.
Yeah. Yeah. I was vegan for probably like a year and my gut was a wreck. Oh my gosh. It was such a wreck. Yeah. It was so bad.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. It's, I would
like
say
kale is really bad for you, or like whatever. I don't know.
I mean, I don't really like buy into that. It's not what we see in clients. However, yes, cooking your veggies can be super helpful, especially if you're dealing with chronic digestive issues, because it just helps break down the fibers a little bit. And like, you can kind of feel that intuitively, you know, when you're eating like warm foods, like if you say you eat like a big bowl of salad versus like a bowl of like oatmeal, it's going to feel different in your system. You can kind of like, that's kind of like food energetics to me, which I also have like been like taking courses in, but I think we can kind of feel that intuitively. It's going to be easier to eat that or something like a soup versus like a big raw kale salad. Like those things are going to sit differently in your body, but I wouldn't say like raw carrots and kale are bad for you. You know, I think cooking your food, eating more warming cooked foods can be very helpful when you have digestive issues. Yes. I don't think, you know, I know people follow like raw diets. I don't really agree with that. I don't think that's like necessary. But I think people like to make massive claims about things and then like scare you. And it's like carrots, the carrots that you're eating are causing your issues. And I'm like, our health crisis is not because of raw carrots. Let me tell you,
I think it's so many hot takes. Like,
it's hard to keep
up. I am definitely no health expert. I love a Sour Patch Kid, but I can say that one thing I've learned over the years is that it's just balance. Yeah. Like, you just got to find that balance that works for you. But I mean, definitely I'm out of whack on balance sometimes too. Like, how do you feel about sugar? Cause for me, that's like a whole issue. Like, how does sugar affect your microbiome?
Yeah. I mean, it'll increase like more dysbiotic bacteria. It can increase, you know, if someone's really, really heavy on sugar and even like alcohol, we can see like a fungal overgrowth take place in the gut. That'll cause a lot of issues and symptoms for people, like especially skin stuff. And it can cause recurring yeast infections and bloating and lots of food reactions.
Candida?
Yeah,
that's what I thought.
Yeah. So sugar, I mean, I would say too much sugar isn't good, but like we know that. we already know that.
Do you eat sugar? Like, do you eat Sour Patch Kids?
I don't eat Sour Patch Kids. No.
Never have a Sour Patch Kid. Are you okay? Do you ever have any,
but
like,
do you care for those? Like, you do you want a Sour Patch Kid? I don't feel like you do.
Not really. No. I mean, do I eat like straight up candy? No. I mean, I tried to eat a kid, like a ever? Mini. Have I ever?
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, my diet growing up, okay. I used to drink a like 32 ounce Coke Slurpee every single day after school with a king-sized Reese's.
Okay, so you okay, like so salty, like kind of chocolatey.
I mean,
you're that girl.
Yeah, I'm more chocolate than fruity, but I used to. I mean, I had to learn all of this. Like, I was not like born like just eating all this healthy food. No, I mean, I was like Gushers, fruit roll-ups, toaster strudels, extra icing. I mean,
I wanted to hear that.
Tell us what you eat like on a daily basis.
So, ready as a certified holistic health coach and a functional gut health practitioner, what do you eat in a day?
Okay.
I want 2 days.
Two days.
Because I feel like one's not enough.
And don't say sardines.
No, yeah, I don't eat sardines. I mean, what do I have in my cabinet? Oysters. I'm like trying to eat some of these things more because they're so, I know. With oysters though, you can buy them smoked and put them on like a chip with like some mustard and just kind of like, I try to like just pop it as a supplement.
Go to breakfast, Hannah.
For breakfast, I'll have like 3 eggs with avocado and a piece of like gluten-free toast, something like that. Or maybe like some cheese, like some organic like cheddar, like a little bit of cheese and eggs makes them so much better. That's pretty standard, I would say. Or I'll have like a smoothie just because it's really easy. And like after this, I've got like 6 calls, you know, I'm also working with like low time and I'm on calls all the time. So I like to be realistic with clients and also myself. Good. So smoothie, you know, with like a good quality protein powder, almond butter, berries, like berries are great for your gut microbiome, loaded with polyphenols, some greens, flax or chia.
What do you cook your eggs in?
Butter.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Kerrygold.
Kerrygold. Okay, great. Yeah. Perfect. I'm on the right track.
Yeah.
All right. What's lunch?
Lunch. What did I have yesterday? I'm trying to think. I'll do like tuna, like a tuna salad or something. Safe Catch is a good brand because they like test their tuna for mercury levels, which is great. I do a lot of like leftovers. Like my biggest meal prep hack is just when you make dinner, make extra so then you have it the next day. So I'll eat like leftover. Yeah, it's like, I mean, that's the easiest thing versus like prepping a bunch of stuff. So I'll do like leftover lentil pasta with like arugula and Kalamata olives. I love olives and olive oil and that kind of stuff.
What's the lentil pasta of your choosing?
It used to be Trader Joe's. They had this organic yellow lentil brown rice and it was so good and they just discontinued it. So I'm like truly having a crisis because it had like
there's a Whole Foods red lentil pasta that comes in a spaghetti that doesn't have a lot of ingredients. You should try that one because I'm gluten-free.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you like chickpea pasta. They have that too and it's only chickpea flour that's in it.
Yeah, I'll do that sometimes too. So I'll do like something like that. And then for dinner, like last night I had ground turkey tacos. I make them like every week. I should switch it up, but I just haven't gotten sick of them yet. So it's like organic ground turkey, almond flour tortillas. I'll do like some Greek yogurt as the sour cream and then greens and bell pepper. And it's like literally 10 minutes and healthy protein.
Are you focusing on anything for each meal? Like it seems like you're focusing a lot of protein, a lot of whole foods. Mm-hmm. Fats and healthy fats. Like do you focus on like fiber seems to always come up with like gut, like, is that something you're like heavily focused on?
Yeah. I had coffee before this and I always put in a scoop of fiber powder just right into my coffee. And then I try to get it in food throughout the rest of the day. It blends right into coffee. Like I like cold brew and I just like throw it all in the blender and then there's no like texture weirdness or anything like that. So right now I'm using Nordic Naturals. I have zero affiliation with them.
I love that brand. Naturals.
Yeah, they have a good one because it has a bunch of different prebiotics. Like prebiotics are super important for your gut and we can get small amounts of them in many different like fruits and veggies, but the ones that have like a lot of prebiotics are like jicama and dandelion greens and things that people don't eat as regularly. I actually love jicama, so I try to grab it at the grocery store. It kind of tastes like a mixture between like a carrot and an apple or something, but you can buy like jicama sticks and they're great to dip in like guacamole or hummus or things like that.
Trader Joe's has those.
Yeah. I love those.
Yes, you have. You've seen them. People have been like, I don't know what, I'll show it to you.
Isn't there a song like the jicama tree?
Weren't people like kind of frying them and making them like French fries? I think they were for a little bit.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah. I think they're super like hydrating, especially when it's so freaking hot outside. They're really great for right now. And like, they're great to put out on like a platter, right? With like cucumber and bell pepper. And like, if you're doing a appetizer board or something like that. So yeah, prebiotics, yes. Fibers, yes. When I'm making a plate, I'm looking to make sure, do I have protein? Do I have fiber? And do I have healthy fats? And then always good to have a good source of like carbs too, you know, because especially women, we need carbs. Our thyroid needs carbs. I mean, everyone needs carbs.
You don't poop. Like, how are you going to get it out? Yeah. I mean, we've been contenders of the keto diet for years. I'm like at this time, never. I'm not
contender.
Oh yeah. I'm not doing it anymore because I just, when you're trying to get pregnant, it just does not work. Yeah. It's not helpful. And it just doesn't help with production of progesterone. Like I find that.
Well, I'm also big on fasting.
Yeah.
Like, what do you think of fasting?
What's your thoughts of fasting?
I don't love it. I like, and what we recommend to clients is like a gentle 12-hour overnight fast, which is like very easy to do. And what most people are, you know, could be doing is if they just like put in a little like consciousness with it or awareness. So that would be, you know, finishing dinner at 7:30 and not eating till 7:30 in the morning or whatever. I don't like women pushing. I mean, not more than 14 hours, not 16 hours, not 18 hours, and not a menstruating female in like her fertile years. It just,
not 72 hours.
No. No, I honestly, you're not wrong because we
she's like, no,
because we did extreme fast for my wedding and I did lose a bunch of weight and it was awesome. A, you gain it back pretty quickly, but B, I do think it didn't help with my fertility journey. So like for the past year, I've been kind of like, what's the word? Like,
struggling?
No, I am struggling. No, I'm not struggling. Being punished from all the fasting, I guess. That's the word I'm looking for.
You're having consequences.
Yeah, I have. Thank you. I couldn't think of the word. I was like, what's the word?
Yeah.
I'm having consequences where I kind of had to like, my body had to feel a little bit more safe. Like, yes. I feel like it didn't feel safe.
Yeah.
And I kind of had to build back like being able to lose weight while eating carbs. Like that was like a very hard thing for me to process because I've always done low carb diets. And I'm like, you can't lose weight eating carbs.
Yeah.
But I think it's more about eating the right carbs. Like it's like sweet potato or lentils or beans or those type of things, but not eating like French fries.
Right. Cookies and crackers and all of that.
Cookies and crackers. Yeah. All that crap.
Yeah, totally.
Actually, I have a question on that. Mm-hmm. Thoughts on like, you know, simple meals like almond flour crackers and like alternatives to healthy
siete
stuff, chips.
Yeah.
Like when you want like a snack or a treat or like having a moment on the couch with your husband, like, is that allowed?
Yes, of course. Yeah. I don't like to like demonize foods. If you guys haven't picked up on that, I'm just like, I think it does more damage when we just like demonize these foods and we're like, this is so bad for us. It's like, okay. Yes, I think those are totally fine. I mean, when you look at how those things will, they'll still really bump your blood sugar up. So if you just eat like half the box of crackers, which I can very easily do with nothing else, you know, it will still bump your blood sugar up like quite high, which will typically cause a crash after that. So that does not mean that they're bad. I would just like eat them with something, dip them in hummus, dip them in guacamole, like add some cheese even that has like protein and fat to it. That's going to help. So I just, you know, I like to recommend avoiding like naked carbs as much as you can, you know, like French fries here and then like here and there. Fine. You're fine. Right. But
is blood sugar related to your gut? Like, is that like something, are they like very connected? That's interesting. That makes sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Essentially like really erratic blood sugar levels can damage the nerve function in the gut, which can damage gut motility, but blood sugar ups and downs they're just super stressful on the body. And it sounds like you're, you know, pretty familiar with this, but, you know, blood sugar crashes will increase cortisol. So we don't want that. I mean, that's not good for digestive function. Essentially, if cortisol goes up, stomach acid production goes down, gut motility is impacted. It sets you up for like poor digestion afterwards, which is also, you know, with fasting, like sometimes if people go really long stretches between meals, they'll find that when they do eat, they're more bloated or they're in more pain that feels like it didn't sit as well. And that's because like their body was in that stress response. So all digestive juices are like, you know, not being produced adequately. And then by the time they eat, they're like kind of setting themselves up for failure because they're in that fight or flight state, even if they really feel stressed or not, just from going too long without eating. So yeah.
With our heart. Remember we ate, didn't
eat? Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
But do you not believe in autophagy of the cells, like regarding like cleansing the cells, like for 72, because doesn't it take 36 hours to achieve autophagy?
Yeah. I mean, you have to fast for a little bit to have that happen. I think, yes, I think that can be beneficial. Yes. I think there are other things that support autophagy too, like exercise, you know, like,
right.
So
that puts you into autophagy.
What is it?
Exercise puts you into autophagy?
It can help support autophagy. Yeah. Just like regularly, you know? So I think there are other things that can be done. Would I be like strongly against a fast like here and there to get that going? No, but I wouldn't recommend it regularly. Like, I think if you're doing it for a specific purpose like that, yeah, sure. I think like the female body is just like very sensitive to not having enough of what it needs. Like we enter that stressed state much quicker than the male body does, because the body is asking like, are we safe enough to grow a child and carry a child, you know? So right. It just doesn't work the exact same, which is also why like keto doesn't really work the exact same. I mean, everyone's different, you know, some people could do great with it and some people don't, but I do think that we'll feel it. Like if women do intermittent fasting for a long period of time, you know, their anxiety will go up, their sleep will take a hit, their periods will take a hit, and they might lose a little weight at the beginning, but typically a couple months in, they're not feeling so good. They might feel great at the beginning, but not after that. So yeah, to circle back around to your question, like I think it could be helpful. Yes. Every once in a while.
Used correctly and not abused.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay, I have a question for you about children and antibiotics. So I have two young girls, pregnant with my third. We entered preschool and all of a sudden we are on amoxicillin like four times a year. Like insane. I'm obviously like psychotic, going crazy about their microbiome, very worried about like prebiotics. So every time they're on antibiotics, I try to shove in a prebiotic, probiotic. I don't even know what it says. It's like a kid's one. What's your feeling on pre-pro and postbiotics? I don't know if it's postbiotics.
Postbiotics, yeah.
And like, how can you help and support children that are on antibiotics so often?
Yeah, I know. Gosh, I mean, the best way would be, you know, try to minimize as much as possible, because it can take the gut a little bit to recover from antibiotics. But yes, I mean, if it's necessary, I would increase prebiotics mostly. So probiotics can be helpful. There was a study done that showed that when someone after antibiotics took probiotics right after, it actually delayed the gut microbiome and like returning to normal. So I'm a little mindful with that, with probiotics, like while taking antibiotics. I think adding it in a couple weeks after is great. What I like people to focus more on is prebiotics. So that's going to be in those different, you know, fruits and veggies and fibers, and like even getting a prebiotic powder and like putting it in their juice or whatever, could be helpful, you know, and just making sure that they're getting enough fruits and veggies. And I would also be mindful of just trying to minimize sugar after an antibiotic, because what an antibiotic does is it comes in and it wipes out like all bacteria, both good and bad. And it's great if you have like, you know, an infection or something, and that's wonderful to wipe out the bad. But when we wipe out all the bacteria, it doesn't touch things like fungi or yeast or something like candida. So we can get that, you know, increase that overgrowth of something like a fungal overgrowth, which will then cause a lot of chronic digestive issues. So, I mean, when you look at antibiotics, like I don't know if it's actually on the box here, because I haven't taken an antibiotic like in the States in a long time, but I had to take one when I was in Europe last summer, and it literally says like, this will increase your risk for candidasis, meaning like candida overgrowth, right? So I'm not sure. I'd have to check the labeling here. It should say that. But yeah, you just don't want to go ahead and like feed lots of sugar after wiping out all of these good gut bacteria. It's like, let's help to regrow these good gut bacteria and not feed the fungi and the yeast. So,
you know, the brand Thorne?
Yeah.
That Thorne. Is that a good prebiotic? Is that a prebiotic?
Thorne has a ton of supplements. They offer a bunch of
stuff. Is there a prebiotic you recommend for adults that you like?
I mean, the fiber powder that I was talking about is a prebiotic powder.
It is. Oh, Nordic Naturals. And does it taste bad?
It doesn't taste like anything.
Yeah. Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
A treat.
It's a powder. You could just put it right into a smoothie, or like you could probably put it into, I don't know, another drink. I don't know if you could like mix it into tea, but I just like put it in my coffee. Yeah. That's great.
You can't taste
And then other things like, what are other prebiotics? Like partially hydrolyzed guar gum. Sun Fiber is a good brand that they sell. PHGG, that's a good prebiotic too. It's typically like very well tolerated by people that are more sensitive as well. So that's another thing. Like I kind of like swap them out. I'll do like the Nordic Naturals, I'll do Sun Fiber, you know, I'll like give it a break and then I'll grab something else and just kind of making sure that I'm getting some of that in. But other things like chia seeds and flax seeds and all of that, I mean, you can add that into your kid's food too, or like blend it into a smoothie and just trying to like repopulate those good gut bacteria.
Yeah, it's tough to avoid. I'm like that mom that tries to be like, all right, we're going to hold off. But then when they're like screaming in pain and they have an ear infection, You can't do anything. Like you just have to keep at it. Killed me at one point. There was like 3 months we were on amoxicillin. I was like, oh my God, this is terrible.
Yeah.
I have a question about flaxseed that you just said. Actually, I have two questions. I read somewhere, this could be also fake news, that it's better to have the ground flaxseed than the whole flaxseed. Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah. Just because the whole ones, you can't really break down.
That's what I thought. Because I was making like an overnight oat moment with some flax seeds. And I don't know. I felt like the ground was just like, I wasn't chewing them. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I feel like I'm just eating like whole seeds that are doing nothing. But hopefully they did something.
I just caused diverticulitis.
Yeah. And then,
I'm just kidding. Shield up.
And then I know I've been bringing this up, but I also would like to hear your take on like fertility and your gut, like, and how they are connected.
Yeah.
I'm guessing the answer has something to do with cortisol, but I'd like to.
You know, I believe that there are many different mechanisms like through which the gut can influence fertility. So there are many different ways. I will say we had to put like a disclaimer on my program where we like take people through the process of repairing their gut, because every round someone was getting pregnant went after like years of trying and not getting pregnant. So then they weren't like being, you know, careful, because they're like, I never get pregnant. Every round we were having to be like, I'm ready. I want to hear this. We had to stop their protocol, you know, because you can't take a bunch of supplements when you're pregnant. So anyway, so I have seen it. I don't think all fertility issues are due to a gut issue. Like there's obviously nuance here, but I've seen it pretty like over and over and over again. It's not something I like advertise so much because it's such a sensitive topic, but I'm like, there is no downside to looking into your gut when trying to get pregnant. And I highly recommend it, because you will give a lot of your gut microbiome to your baby, you know? So if you feel like there's stuff that's like off in there, you know, let's clear it up before getting pregnant ideally. But there's many kind of different ways through which this can happen. So one of them being just like nutrient absorption. That's where your gut is where we absorb all of the nutrients from our food. So if someone is dealing with chronic digestive issues, they're not absorbing the nutrients from their food very well. A lot of people aren't, due to like low stomach acid, due to chronic stress and things like that. So if you are dealing with nutrient deficiencies, I mean, everything's going to take a hit. You just like simply won't have what you need to actually, for your body to like fulfill its many different processes, right? So like the adrenals need certain nutrients like vitamin C and B vitamins and sodium, potassium, right? And liver detoxification, like that's a nutrient dependent process. If you don't have adequate nutrients, your liver can't do its job efficiently. So when it's kind of a simple way for me to explain it, like when you just widen the lens, if you can't absorb the nutrients from the food that you're eating well, everything's going to take a hit from there, including, you know, fertility, and hormone production and things like that, detoxification, all
of
that.
How do you know that you are nutrient deficient? Do you have to take a blood test, or is that the only way you'd know?
I think testing in the blood is great. Sometimes we'll do like a hair tissue mineral analysis on clients. It's checking in on mineral status for people. But yeah, you know, you can do some blood work to see what's going on there. And then the other thing is like gut infections, you know, so there is, I don't want to misspeak here, but I believe there is a connection between Helicobacter pylori or H. pylori and infertility. It does damage the parietal cells, which then you'll produce less stomach acid, and then you won't absorb the nutrients from your food efficiently. So that seems to all kind of like fit together. So anytime that you have like these different gut infections, sometimes parasites, you know, I'd have to dig into the research to understand or like relay exactly which parasites have been like linked with infertility. But anything that's causing a lot of inflammation in the gut and negatively impacting nutrient absorption, you know, it would make sense that it would then impact fertility. And then you mentioned cortisol, like high cortisol level can be stemming from the gut. When we have a lot of gut imbalances, it kind of will influence the sensitivity of the HPA axis or the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis. That's like your stress control center, like where you actually produce, you know, how you actually produce cortisol and things like that. So yes, gut issues can negatively impact your HPA axis and can, they're a massive stressor on the body. So a lot of the times when people think about stress, they think like, you know, my to-do list and my emotional stressors and my mental stressors and financial pressure and all of that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of physical stressors too, like toxin exposure, blood sugar dysregulation, nutrient deficiencies, gut issues. And all of those should kind of be, yeah, taken into account. Another thing, like there's so many different ways through which the gut can influence it, but estrogen circulation, the gut plays a massive role in estrogen circulation and levels. So we've got a portion of our gut microbiome called the estrobilome. It's literally like the word estrogen and the word microbiome put together. And this is responsible for estrobilome. Yeah. For like circulating estrogen levels in the body. And if estrogen's too high, it'll kind of like, progesterone can look low in comparison because they're kind of like doing this like seesaw, like dance together. Right. So sometimes progesterone is just low after like years of chronic stress, years of birth control use, et cetera, not eating enough, not adequate carbohydrate intake, mineral deficiencies, all of that. Right. And then sometimes estrogen can kind of like it looks low in comparison to estrogen is what I'm trying to say.
How do you fix that?
How do you fix
diet? Yeah.
So much. We do so much.
Like, give me a couple things.
Like three things she can do.
Yeah, give me a couple things.
To raise progesterone?
Yeah, I went gluten and dairy free, mm-hmm. which I know you talk about that, and then it's not for everybody, but that was something that actually really did help me. And my nutritionist that I'm working with actually made me eliminate dairy and then bring it back in to see how I felt. Yeah. And I was this is gross, but I was really gassy when I brought it back in. So so then I took it away again because I was like, I don't think my body is processing dairy. It's very inflammatory for my body. Mm-hmm. So now I've been gluten and dairy free for about 3 months and I do think it helps.
Yeah,
I really do.
Yeah. I think what we see a lot of the time is people can't digest dairy due to like other gut stuff. So one of the biggest things we see people be able to reintroduce after working with us is dairy, which is great. Like I didn't eat gluten or dairy for, I kid you not, a decade. and now I can like put cheese on in pasta and salads and stuff. And life is better.
You avoid gluten?
What is it?
You avoid gluten though?
I do. I avoid gluten. Yeah. I'm not like afraid to go out and get a burger with like a real bun if they don't have a gluten-free option. But I will ask if they have a gluten-free option and I'll get that. But in regards to raising progesterone levels, vitamin C is very important. So there is some like clinical data to show that, I think it was like 750 milligrams of vitamin C, which is honestly not that much, taken consistently over the course of, I think the study was 12 weeks, raised progesterone levels. So definitely vitamin C, sodium, potassium, magnesium, all of these things are going to be really, really important. Balancing blood sugar, eating enough, and checking stress. Like what is causing your stress? Everyone's going to be different. So it's like, what's the thing in your life causing you the most stress? Where can you make some adjustments there? Those would be some good places to start. And then certain B vitamins too, can help with progesterone production.
I have one last question on that. Thank you, for that information. That was actually helpful, but, like types of workouts, mm-hmm. are there some that are, is this true, but like some are more stressful to the body or your gut or than others? Like, and like, what if you enjoy some,
like, are you a HIIT girly or you like Pilates?
Like I really love spin. And like, I've been told by like multiple people, it's like, don't do that because it's too stressful to the body. But like, I love it. So it's like,
yeah.
Is that stressful to my body?
Probably, you know, spin I'd say is better than like training for a marathon. I do think, you know,
not doing that.
Chronic, like long form running is like very stressful on the body. And I think there's a time and place for it. You know, if you're really trying to optimize fertility and help your body feel safe, then it's a good time to like slow it down on the chronic intense cardio, you know? I used to take probably 4 HIIT classes a week and I was like in denial about it. Like I was like, no, this is fine. This is fine. I'm good. I would just like chug coffee and go to HIIT classes and my digestion was a wreck. I was like really afraid of, I mean, if I'm just being honest, I was just afraid of gaining weight. Like I was just really trying to, you know, keep my weight down. And little did I know that once I slowed down on all the exercise, like I lost weight. Like it was like, cause I was just like increasing the inflammation in my body. My body was just like fighting, right? My cortisol was so high during that time. So with HIIT, Do I think a HIIT class here and there can be part of a routine? Sure. Would I recommend women doing HIIT as their primary form of exercise? No.
No, I agree. Is HIIT spin? Would you categorize spin as HIIT? No, I don't.
Not necessarily.
Okay, good. That's what, because I do it like 3 times a week and I just want to make sure I'm doing. And by the way, this is going from not working out ever.
Yeah.
To past like 2 months, like going at least 2 to 3 times a week, which I've been loving.
Yeah.
And I feel like it actually helped me get more of a regular cycle actually.
Yeah.
Like I do feel like sweating and like moving my body has really helped me.
Yeah. And exercise is like so fantastic for blood sugar regulation and insulin.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. Okay. So I would say like, don't push yourself too much and just make sure that you're, you know, eating enough, maybe some carbs beforehand and some protein after, But I'm a big fan of strength training. Like I love strength training. I do it.
That's what I do more of now. Strength training more than anything. Like HIIT, I would categorize more as like an Orange Theory, yeah. Right? Like whereas like strength training is more like incorporating weights and like minor movements and stretches.
Yep. Yeah. Strength training is just going to be like slower. It's not necessarily not like hard, you know, it is. You're kind of doing like heavier weights slower versus trying to like hit your max during this like sprint phase, you know?
Yes, understood.
One of those thrown in, you know, here and there, I think is like great for cardiovascular health and other things, but not the primary focus. It also depends on where you're at. Like the clients that we see have digestive issues, have thyroid issues, are exhausted, they're riding burnout. Like, it's not the time for HIIT and it's not the time for long form cardio either. I'm like walk, yoga, strength train, a couple times a week, you know?
Yeah. I believe in yoga so much. Yeah. All right. So we're going to kind of round out here, but one question that I want to make sure I ask you is on the gut health masterclass that I watched, one of the things they said is that one of the best things for your microbiome is having a dog. I was curious. Is that a myth? Is that a fact? And why?
That's funny. That's interesting. I could honestly see this going both ways because dogs will also give you infections. They'll give you like parasites.
My dogs.
Yeah.
No infection.
Because dogs will like, as you know, walk around outside and like eat. If you're not watching them, they'll like eat poop or they'll like eat something else.
Honey poop.
Yeah.
All day. I lick my dog's tongue. So, I mean, I'm definitely.
Right. And then you let them lick your face and yeah. So, but probably, I mean, I would assume that's probably because like, A, you're outside more walking them and being outside is good for your gut microbiome. Cause you're like, you're getting inoculated with the microbes in nature, you know, like these different microorganisms, in the environment can like being in nature has been shown to increase your gut bacterial diversity. So I would assume that's why, and probably also because like, they're out and about in nature and then they're kind of like bringing that in inside with you. That's what I'm sure there is some truth to that. But I would not let my dog, lick my face. Nope.
I can't honestly help it. It's like the second I show signs of life, he's in my mouth. Yeah. It's not like a choice that I'm making. It's just, it happens to me.
It just, once you go for it, you never go back.
I honestly, I love those tonguing moments with him. All right. Well, you're lovely and smart. And could you let all of our listeners know like how to find you if they wanted to have a session and give them more information about your business?
Yeah, absolutely. So You can find us at my website. It's just hannahaylward.com. We do have a podcast as well that we launched this year. It's called the Nutrient Dense Podcast. So if you're interested in learning, like I do like deep dives on big topics, like gut estrogen connection, gut cortisol connection, gut thyroid connection, histamine overload. Like if you want to get into the sciencey stuff and kind of like nerd out, that's the place for you for sure. I can just teach so much more in an hour versus like one Instagram post. But I am on Instagram often as well. And you can find us there at Hannah Aylward HHC. And then we have a quiz too, that we can totally offer your listeners. So it's just like a root cause assessment quiz where you can answer some questions, and based on your answers, it'll like pop out what is likely your deeper root cause, whether that's like low stomach acid, poor bile flow, dysbiosis, whatever it might be. And then you'll get next steps from there with like educational videos from me, what you can do, why it can happen, all of that. So we can make sure to get you guys that link too.
Thank you so much. We'll include that in our stories. Thank you for your time.
Yeah. That was awesome.
I feel like we just got a personal session. So like I'm pleased.
Other people will be.
Definitely. It's going to help everyone, but thank you for your time and thank you for answering those questions. It was a great episode and great to meet you.
Yes. Thanks so much for having me.
Nice to meet you.
All right. Have a great day.
Bye.